The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. Every day around the world, many people are exposed to toxic chemicals in their environment, often without being aware of it. In some cases, the use of products such as unregulated skin lightening creams or lotions contain dangerously high levels of toxic mercury, according to experts. There are also cases where people eat or drink food that are full of chemicals and they do not necessarily know. So on today's show, we will take a look at how we are sometimes exposed to unsafe chemicals in our societies. And to do that, we are joined by our expert, Dr. Christy Pullen. Dr. Pullen is a scientist of health program at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Dr. Pullen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Let me remind our listeners that if you would like to join the conversation, you can call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com or post your comments on facebook.com/voahealthchat. And we will discuss the issue in a moment. But first, here is a report on the issue of skin lightening. Helen Diaye uses a skin bleaching lotion every day. She says she was not aware of any health risks when she started using the products.
It is because I used to see my friends bleaching their skin, so I also started myself. But I can now see that it is not good because it affects my face and some parts of my body. I'm even trying to stop by using weaker products.
Skin lightening is a common practice among women and some men in many parts of the world. But experts say the products used often contain hydroquinone and mercury, two powerful toxins. Dakar resident Nabu Dime says skin bleaching is not good.
I am against skin bleaching because it seems to make you beautiful for a moment. But with time, it can destroy your body. It can bring you diseases like cancer and skin infections.
Many users of skin bleaching products feel that lightening their skin will enhance their beauty. In some cultures, men are said to be attracted to women with fair skin. But Dakar resident Hassan says he prefers natural beauty.
What I like about a woman is when she's natural, whether she's naturally fair or naturally dark.
Experts have linked skin lightening to various side effects, such as excessive darkening of the skin on the finger joints, atrophy of the skin, stretch marks, infections to system-wide health problems like diabetes and high blood pressure. African markets are flooded with these products in what is said to be a multi-million dollar industry. Dr. Hawa Diagne, a dermatologist in Dakar, says part of the problem is the lack of capacity to scrutinize imported products.
What we need to understand is that we don't have the means to control or test these products. The products that come in can be labeled no hydroquinone or 1% hydroquinone because people who introduce it here know for a fact that we don't have laboratories or any structure that would allow us to control what's in these products.
Some countries have passed legislation banning the import and sale of skin lightening products, but many of the products can still be found on the shelves of beauty shops and markets. And Dr. Pullen, again, thank you for joining us. I have this report on skin lightening specifically because it's an issue that has been at the forefront, especially in a region such as Sub-Saharan Africa, where we have our primary audience. And when we talk about the dangers of skin lightening, we hear often about chemicals like mercury, hydroquinone, Can you tell us about this in terms of the use of mercury and what it causes? Because I've read in some places where some reports where they say there were no proven research as to the direct effect of mercury, not necessarily with skin lightening, but in general. I think it was also related to fish. So if you can just give us a sense of what is going on there.
Yeah, with mercury in particular, we think about it oftentimes with fish consumption, and so this has been linked, or the exposure to mercury has been linked to neurodevelopmental impacts in developing children, for example. So women are advised, particularly pregnant women, are advised to avoid fish that are high in mercury. And so when we think a lot about the health impacts of this particular chemical, we think about the neurological impacts that it could have, particularly on the developing brain.
Okay. And you mentioned fish, and I wanted to come back to that. But with regards to the skin lightening, what can you tell us in terms of the quantity, if there is such a thing? Because a lot of time we hear that it's unregulated, and that's what one of the problems. So it is said to be a very high percentage of mercury in these products. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the mercury content so much of the products, but the chemical that I'm actually most interested in the products is the hydroquinone.
Okay.
So when we think about how chemicals might interact with non-chemical stressors, say things like stress or nutritional deprivation, and how that might impact our system overall, then the hydroquinone becomes a really interesting chemical to think about and discuss.
So what is it exactly, hydroquinone? How can we understand what this chemical is?
Yeah, it's just a small chemical. It's used typically, again, in a medical context or medical area to try to remove scarring, and it's prescribed typically by a physician. Mm-hmm. But what it does once it's in the body is that it has the ability to interact with what we call the endocrine system. And so our endocrine system is really important for, again, the development of the brain. It's also really important for our immune system functioning and metabolism. And so you can have lots of different chemicals that are interacting in the same kind of place, but not only chemicals, but say stress, whether or not you're stressed, can also change the way that your endocrine system or your hypothalamic pituitary axis, adrenal axis that interacts with that endocrine system can work within the body. And so this really is a nice intersection to think about how chemicals and non-chemical stressors can combine to impact human health.
Because I heard this argument where people were saying, oh, you know, hydroquinone must be safe because it is prescribed by a doctor, as you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. But it has to be regulated, of course, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, so when it's prescribed by your doctor, it's typically going to have a dose. You know what the dose is. But if it's in a product where you don't know absolutely the levels that you're being exposed to, that can have a real impact on your health.
Okay, so we took the example of skin lightening where, you know, this is something that people are actually aware of. What are the examples of situations where people will perhaps have a behavior, perhaps consume a product, use it, or be around a product that they are aware of in terms of the toxicity, but they are still very much in contact with that product?
Right, yeah. So a lot of times when we think about, say, not only the skin lightening cream, but the container itself that it's in can be a source of exposure to potentially toxic chemicals. Oh. And so plastics, so some of the chemicals that are used to make plastic can leach out into, say, a water bottle or other types of containers, and then you can then be exposed to those plasticizers that are also known to, or, you know, that can potentially interact with our endocrine system as well. And so just in everyday things around your home, you can have flame retardants, so chemicals that have been used to try to prevent prevent, say, furniture from burning too quickly in a fire can present a health impact. Chemicals that are in flooring or carpeting can also impact your health as well. And so we're surrounded by lots of common things that pose, you know, potential risks to human health.
That's very, very interesting. I wanted to go a little more into the issue of plastic bottle, because I've heard that before, but it seems like a lot of people are not aware. And when we talk about plastic bottles, what type of plastic bottles are we talking about? Because when you look at when we get our water bottles from the supermarket, they're often in plastic bottles. Are these very bad? Is it a certain condition that creates the issue? What can you tell us?
Yeah, it's hard to say whether or not something is really bad or not to have it on that type of scale. But oftentimes when we think about some of the plastics, again, some of the water bottles that we might have could contain a chemical known as bisphenol A. And this is a chemical that, again, we know can interrupt and interact with our endocrine system. So one of the common themes is that we can have these chemicals that can impact our body's ability to metabolize, you know, different metabolic processes as well as our immune functioning. So BPA, but then also substitutes for that. Bisphenol S, you know, could have that similar type of toxicity. And a lot of times when we think about that, say, the chemical leaching into or moving into the water, it might be, say, if you're microwaving a container, a food container that is made out of a plastic that has some of these types of chemicals in them, then that heating process can, especially if you're cooking, say, fatty foods, can help to pull some of those plastics and those potentially toxic chemicals out of the plastic too, and increase your exposure to that chemical.
So speaking of microwaving, is it then fair to say it is better to microwave your food in a glass container or any type of other containers?
Maybe? Yeah, I would say, you know, I don't know whether or not it's better or not, but I certainly microwave my food in a glass container. So you do minimize your exposure to those types of plastic chemicals.
Okay. What other tips can you give us in terms of bottles, containers, and some of the dangers of
Again, I think a lot of it is really trying to think as carefully as you can about the types of products that you're using. If you can use something that's glass, that's going to be, you know, potentially better than using something that's plastic. But at the same time, it's better for people to hydrate than to not hydrate at all. So water is really important for our bodies. And so if all you have access to is a plastic bottle full of water, then I think that you have to make that decision as to whether or not drinking that water is particularly helpful for your own individual situation. And so, I think that using glass when you can is great, but you should also, you know, think about your specific situations and what that means for your own individual health impacts.
So then what I can get from what you just said, when you talked about the skin lightening cream, the type of containers that they are also, produced in, if I can say that, then I guess if we look at other creams that are not skin lightening, just regular cream that we use, whether it's a form of cocoa butter or whatever each person may use for their daily cream, is this true to some extent for every type of lotions or cream that we use to pay attention to the container?
Yeah, I mean, there's potential, I think, for the chemicals, again, that we think about a lot for plastics to get into most any product. And so it depends a lot on the chemical structure of the product itself, on, you know, how, if there's been a heating process, if you've had a lotion container that's been sitting in a hot car for days, you know, so there are lots of different considerations that go into whether or not a chemical could enter into that product itself. But oftentimes, again, when we talk about the testing or lack of testing, you're not necessarily going to have the plastics that are in your container on the label at all. And so, you know, really trying to be aware of the type of packaging that you receive your products in, and your food as well. And so, you know, if you can get something as close to, you know, unpackaged as possible, then that's really great. Because again, you can have some of the movement of these chemicals into the products that you're using on your skin or consuming.
So if we know that bisphenol and other chemicals are present in some specific type of packaging, why is it that they are being used? What type of regulations are put in place to ensure that, you know, these are not used? Or is it the only way to have this type of packaging?
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure about the regulations, especially those that exist internationally. But, you know, oftentimes, too, we think about how often you're being exposed to that specific chemical. If you're someone, say, that works in a facility that has thermal paper receipts that have BPA in them as well, then you can have a really high exposure because you're touching those paper receipts every single day, day in, day out. And so that individual's exposure is going to be a lot higher than, say, the average consumer that, you know, maybe gets one receipt a week. And so oftentimes when we think about the exposures to a lot of these products as well, we look at it from the worker perspective, so how we make sure that we keep the people that are exposed to these types of chemicals at very high levels safe, and then also how do we think about the average exposures that are happening across populations. And so, you know, there are a lot of different things that go into determining whether or not something is safe or unsafe for an entire population.
Wow. So tell us about evidence-based study that you've worked on to demonstrate something that, whether it's you that have worked on it or that you've come across, to demonstrate something that people, to perhaps raise awareness on an issue that people really don't know, because really this show is also about educating. You just talked about the plastic barrels, and this is very enlightening for many people. Is there something else there that perhaps we need to know as well in the same line of discussion?
Yeah, well, a lot of work that we do here focuses on, say, flame retardant chemicals. So that's another thing to think about. And oftentimes when you think about flame retardants, so again, these are these chemicals that are associated with an increased cancer risk. We think about them in furnitures and, you know, mattresses, but they can also exist within electronics. And so, say there are, when we think about electronic waste recycling, and so particularly if you have illegal or unregulated recycling of electronics waste, the people that are going through and pulling out the metals that might have some value are being exposed to extremely high or potentially extremely high levels of flame retardants as well. And even when you turn on your television or you know, start your computer, like the monitors themselves, they can release little bits of flame retardants as well into your environment. And so oftentimes I think some of it is not only just knowing about the different types of chemicals that are out there, but the different places where they might exist. And sometimes they exist in places that we might not expect for them to be. And so, you know, having a flame retardant in a couch, one might expect it to be there. But thinking about the flame retardants in electronics is a place where people might not think about it as much.
Okay. And Dr. Pullen, we are going to take a very short break and continue our discussion. So stay with us. And this is very, very enlightening. And we appreciate your time. We will be right back.
All right. Thank you.
Welcome back to Health Chat. If you're just joining us, our topic today is chemicals in our environment, and often unsafe, if I can say that. So toxic chemicals in our environment. That's what we're discussing today with Dr. Christy Pullen. She's scientist of health program at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Now, Dr. Pullen, I have a question from one of our listeners, and he lives in Guinea. And Kamara says, I'm a farmer. I work in the farm 6 days a week. And I heard about pesticide being toxic. Can you tell me about this problem? It's kind of a vague question, but I'm sure you can narrow down to a way where it makes sense.
So, you know, I work on a number of pesticides, and one that we think about or that I've been working quite a bit more recently is a combination of two different pesticides, so 2,4-D and glyphosate. And those two chemicals, recently the World Health Organization deemed them to be probable and possible carcinogens. And so we have these chemicals that could be used in crops in the United States, at least, that, you know, have the potential to increase your cancer risk. And that's not necessarily specific to just those two chemicals. We have lots of pesticides that have potential health impacts, again, impacting your endocrine system or leading to increased cancer. And so, you know, thinking about ways that we can reduce our dependency on chemical forms of agriculture, are there other ways to think about how we might manage our pests outside of using high amounts and large volumes of chemicals and pesticides that, you know, could result in negative health impacts in human populations?
So did you, I was going to ask you, you talked about two specific pesticides. What are they?
Oh, yeah. So glyphosate, which is commonly known as Roundup. And so it's used largely on corn and soy, but then also in residential areas to get rid of weeds. Mm-hmm. And then 2,4-D, which is another chemical that is used to control weeds and soy areas, and a bit in corn as well.
Okay. So we have Cynthia in Ghana, and maybe it's a bit of a follow-up to this question. Mm-hmm. She wants to know, she said, how do pesticides affect our food consumption, affect our health through our food consumption?
Mm-hmm. Well, so there can be residues left on food after pesticides have been used. And so we have, at least in the United States, regulations and limits that are set to protect human health from being exposed not only in the food that we're eating, but also if you live close by to a field where the chemicals are being sprayed, and then also for the workers themselves to be able to have the protective equipment that they need in order to try to protect them from the potential harms that could be associated with pesticides. And so we can be exposed to pesticides in lots of different ways, not only in the food we eat, but then also and living close by to a place or walking, you know, close by to a place where the pesticides are being applied, or applying them ourselves as well. So there are lots of different things to think about and how we might protect ourselves.
So let's talk about industrial chemical and how it affects neighborhood, community. We've seen some disasters in the past, perhaps Fukushima, if I may use that as an example. I don't know, and you can correct me. What are the steps that governments take, at least here in the United States? Mm-hmm. What should be the steps to ensure that, when these big factories are producing, it doesn't affect people that live around? And what type of chemicals are very often do we see when it comes to industrial chemicals that are affecting communities?
Right. Well, with industrial chemicals, we have one law that really focuses on those in the United States, and that's the Toxic Substances Control Act. Mm-hmm. And so under that law specifically, there are about 80,000 chemicals that could be in commerce at any time. And one of the ways that we can strengthen this law is to think about how, you know, public health protective state and federal policies can work together to ensure that the public is protected from chemicals. And so very few of those 80,000, so less than 500, have ever been fully evaluated for their safety by any, government agency. And so making sure that we're able to test and identify chemicals that could be of concern, and then limiting the exposures that populations around those areas that are producing them, but then also where they're being used in consumer products are limited.
We've seen in a movie I produced several years ago, played by an actress, I forgot her name, the legal, I think she was a legal helper or something, and she investigated a community, Ellen Brockovich, exactly. Uh-huh. She really raised awareness about this type of issues.
Right.
And I wanted to know, when you deal with a community that is confronted with what is happening, and in the mm-hmm. case of that movie, Ellen Brockovich, it seems like she had to go through so much hurdle for people to understand what this community is going through. Mm-hmm. What are the steps? I know you talked about what is here in the United States, but really, what can people do? if they don't have an attorney or someone from the government to help them, how can they help themselves?
I mean, I think some of it is trying to limit the exposures that we know that we can limit. So say if you're involved in disassembling electronics that are being shipped from overseas that have large, you know, numbers of chemicals and potentially unknown chemicals associated with those, to limit your exposure, to limit your children's exposures, you know, things that you can do to change your individual lifestyle if possible, you know, to reduce your exposures there. I get same thing with the skin lightening creams. If it's not something that's necessary, you know, in order for you to be healthy, then not exposing yourself to something that you don't need. And so how do we think about some of the choices that we have available to us and figuring out whether or not we ourselves, you know, can make a change that can impact our exposure to those chemicals. Some things are harder at the individual level, but there are some choices that we can make that can protect us and our families.
A lot of times, people don't even know. They're not even aware.
Yeah.
So, really, if you don't know, for example, again, I come back to the example of the water bottle, and this is it's such an important information. What do you do when you don't know? You know, you have products in the home that are used to clean every day, your bathroom, your kitchen, and then you don't know how toxic these can be. I know that I read somewhere to replace some of these cleaning products with vinegar.
Right.
I mean, that's somebody's perhaps opinion, or maybe it has been demonstrated and proven scientifically. I don't know. But if you don't know about vinegar as an alternative, what do you do if you want to clean your bathroom?
That's really right. I think it's talking to your friends and family and listening to shows like this one, you know, trying to educate yourself as much as humanly possible, and then just trying to use the simplest solution to whatever your situation might be. If it's cleaning your shower, you can always just test whether or not vinegar works for you and does the job that your other cleaners might do. And if it does, then, you know, that allows you to make some of those choices. So, you know, really building upon the knowledge that exists around us constantly. And finding out what other people are doing or thinking about or saying, or, you know, neighboring countries even. So if you know that the Ivory Coast has banned using a skin lightening cream, and if you're in a country that hasn't banned it, well, then maybe that gives you something to think about. You know, if you have a government that's saying that this isn't safe for our population, you know, maybe that's also not a safe choice for me to make as an individual, regardless of what country I live in.
Okay.
So just keeping yourself aware.
So, Dr. Pullen, if I could ask you some tips in terms of what to pay attention to, be more mindful of, be more careful. We talked about skin lightening, which is something that most often women do, but in some countries like the DRC, men do that as well. So we know today to pay more attention to skin lightening. Now, if we look at some of the habits that women have, men have, and perhaps what is done for children, some of the product that is done for children, if you could give us perhaps one or two tips as to watch out, to pay attention, just like you mentioned the water bottle, for example, in men's product that they use, women's product or children's product, either that or in at home, you know, the things that we eat. Could you just pick or choose one or two pointers for us to pay attention to?
I would say that, you know, one of the things that, again, just for myself, that I look at a lot when I'm going out and buying products are things that contain fragrances. And so, you know, a fragrance, particularly one that goes into the air that you spray and becomes aerosolized, can be, you know, potentially toxic to the human body as well. And so avoiding things that have artificial scents and even just the word fragrance itself might, you know, help to decrease some of your exposure to some potentially, you know, toxic chemicals. Also, just staying, you know, as close to, you know, simple ingredients as you can for the different types of products you buy. And so, you know, for lotions and things like that, if there are ways to, you know, avoid, you know, chemicals that say you might have an allergic reaction to, or that you know of, again, that, you know, have been recalled in other places that you can avoid in your everyday purchases, I think that's also something really useful. And then, you know, thinking about the packaging. So if you can buy an apple that isn't surrounded in plastic, that's going to be, you know, better than having one that has been surrounded in plastic. And so, you know, just trying to make small choices every day that, you know, try to limit the complexity of the types of things that we use, I think might, you know, help people think quite a bit or at least in some ways minimize some of the exposures they have to some of these chemicals.
Very helpful advice, Dr. Poulin. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
And we thank our guest, Dr. Christy Poulin, Scientist of Health Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Now, for more on today's topic and toxic chemicals around us, you can visit us at voanews.com/health and join us on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat to continue the discussion. We thank all our affiliates for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.